I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Action taken during closed session by unanimous vote. The board ratified a settlement agreement on behalf of the Marysville Joint Unified School District versus Hingle, case dated June 1st of 2016 regarding an Office of Administrative Hearings due process complaint. Okay, there's no other business to report. Comments from board members. Usually we have, we should thank God for small favors. Okay. Comments from board members. Mr. Denimal. Okay. Mr. Crawford? No. Okay. Mr. Boom?
One quick question. All the trees that were put in over at Marysville High School, about 15 of them, by PG&E and the students. They look like they're dead, drying up. I looked at them today, and I think a few of them are already dead. But anyways, how are we supposed to be watering those? Or, I mean, they're brand? Pardon? The ones along, what is that, 17th or 18th Street? Well, they're, those are potted trees. In this type of heat, they can go one day without water, maybe. Anyways, it looks like to me that you already lost most of them, so. Okay.
Mr. Rasmussen?
I know it seems like graduation was so long ago, but I'm just so glad that we have made the commitment to our music programs throughout the district to be able to hear the national anthem played by 7th and 8th graders on guitar. It was just fascinating, and then getting to hear the choir perform. So I think that's going to have us great dividends down the road by having that music program.
Hey, Mr. Fleury?
Go above and beyond in reading those. I am just amazed what our department heads have done, our principals have done, and it really gives a good thumbnail sketch of what's going on in the district. I think we're in the right vein after going to the last CSBA and hearing other people. I'm really proud of our district, I think. Everybody's done a great job this year. And the above and beyond, that's one thing when you go around, you don't usually hear that until you go around. And as you know, I'm working for the cannery now, so I get to stop in different departments and that. And I was out in the maintenance one day, and they had two people that really had gone above and beyond. They discovered, the maintenance director discovered, there had been some vandalism in the pool, and they thought they were going to have to drain it and refill it at a cost to the district. Two of them asked if anybody knows scuba diving, and two of the men, Matt McCall and Doug Trower, said, I am going to go down and scuba dive and fix that where we don't have to drain the pool. Small amount, but that kind of leadership and those kind of employees, what makes this a great district. And then the last thing is I was asked to do the graduation speech last week for the Youth Build, and that's really a great program to see the success stories for these kids what probably would not have made much of their lives. And they were able to go through there, graduated, and they have gone on where most of them were dropouts. So that's what it's about, reaching a kid at a time or two kids to make them be successful in the real world and not go to the criminal side. Thank you.
Mr. Harris?
My comment is short. I would just like to thank Amber's staff the cafeteria, the staff workers, and the breakfast program, the lunch program. I just wish the community would take part in it. It's been out there. There's ample opportunity, and there's just hardly anybody that partakes in the program. It's all free, and I don't know how much more her department could do to advertise. It's been on the radio. There's posters and things all over. But they've just done a great job, and I've gone to a couple of cafeterias, and still, even during the summer, it's so neat to see the cook manager or the manager sitting there talking to the kids by name as they come in during the summer. I mean, and say, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so's little brother right there. It's just so neat, but I just wish the public would take more of a part of it, because they're working very hard to make sure that these kids have nutritious meals at least once or twice a day. And I applaud that whole department and anyone else who took part in helping them put that together. Thank you.
I mentioned this in the closed session, but I want to bring it out today. And I think all the board members would agree. We are so proud of the employees that we have working here and the job that you guys are doing. And we were, another board member and myself were just really excited. We were talking about that a week ago. So it's important. And of course, we're coming up on Independence Day, and it's probably the event that's really close to my heart. I've served in the military, and I have a very big fondness for the Independence Day. And we won't see you till after that, but everybody have a great Independence Day on safe. July 4th. Safe, yeah. I used to sell fireworks. Don't burn the place down. Okay, and that brings us to, I have no public comments, and that brings us to the superintendent's report. Oh, well, I guess we won't. We won't. Opportunities for employee organizations to address the board. Okay, Marysville Joint Unified Teachers Association. Oh, yes, 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 okay.
So, in the interest of time, keep this short and sweet, but you do get to have a different face this evening. Inga is about up to her eyeballs and a million things to do, and so since I was already coming this way and I'm in town, I volunteered to come this evening. We just wanted to make sure to thank everybody who works behind the scenes all summer long. There's a lot of work that the general public doesn't know goes on at schools over the summer and in school districts. So we want to thank all of the teachers that are working all the way summer through, you know, all the teachers that have all these summers off. And so they're doing a lot of hard work, but our administrators, our secretaries, our board, our district, a lot of work goes on over the summertime as well. I also want to give a big thank you and shout out to all of the site administrators. You were talking about graduations, all the graduations and promotion ceremonies that go on. There's a lot of work that goes into that, and administrators put up with a lot. They get to deal with the parents and the teachers and the students before and after. And so everything that we have heard sounds like all of these ceremonies went off really, really well, and that pays credence to these sites and how they are led. Also, I wanted to give a big thank you to Romero. I know in a teacher shortage that I can't imagine the hiring that is going on this summer. Must be really kind of working on Romero's last nerve. And again, the site administrators, there's a lot that goes on with hiring new teachers in a teacher shortage. So much praise and much applause to the people that are getting that done. And the new teachers that are being hired, we just wanted to give them a very brief welcome, and we will be welcoming more and more as the summer goes through, and probably right up to the very beginning of school from the looks of things. Thank you.
Okay, operating engineers, local number 3, California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees, Supervisory Unit. Okay. Now, I still have no public comment cards. And the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. Rex. As we embark on summer, as Ms. Stegall said, it's not a shortage of activities or work that's going on. If you haven't been out to Lyndhurst, you need to go take a look. It's going to be gorgeous when it's done, but right now it's a mess. It's amazing how much cement has been removed. It's quite interesting. Of course, behind us here, MCAA, they're getting ready for their new portable buildings to be delivered. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And so a big thank you to all of that work, because it is important for us to get it done, and we all have our fingers crossed before school begins. So hold on. It's going to be exciting. I did pass out to the board information that Mr. Fleury did bring back from the CSBA regarding superintendent evaluation. And so if you would take the time to review that material at our next regularly scheduled meeting on July 19th, we will meet in closed session to begin formulating goals for the superintendent for the, can you believe it, the 16-17 school year. And that is all I have this afternoon. Thank you.
So, Mr. X, I think we're going to have a fairly long meeting tonight. Is there a way we can turn the air conditioner on?
Or no, we don't want any air conditioning on. Because
it will speed the meeting up. Mr. Rasmussen, we would love to do that, but currently we have only one functioning unit. The other one is dead, and we're waiting for the new buildings to come to MCAA, because we're going to take one of their old units and replace it in here. So this is as cool as it gets in here right now.
No more questions.
So moving quickly through the agenda would behoove all of us.
Approval of minutes. Okay. We have two minutes to approve, from one from 5:24 and the other one from 6:07. Do we want to do that in separate?
No, one.
Okay, we can do both those in one motion. Do I hear a motion to accept the minutes?
If there are no additions or deletions, make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, Mr. Broom and Mr. Daniel will second. Okay, that being said, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? 7-0. Okay. The consent agenda. Before we do that, does anybody have any comments about items on the consent agenda?
Yeah, I would like to pull a few items. Don't shoot me. I know it's hot in here. I'll try to be brief. Maintenance operations 1 and 2, facilities and energy management 1 and 3, and business services 4 and 5.
Okay. I think, is your microphone on? Because we couldn't hear a thing.
Yeah. Maintenance operations and transportation 1 and 2. Facilities and energy management 1 and 3, and business services 4 and 5.
And what was the business services 4 and 5?
Just some quick questions on them.
Okay. So that was maintenance 1 and 2, facilities 1 and 3. Business services 4 and 5.
Yes.
Okay. Would anybody else like anything else pulled?
Yes. Personnel services number 10.
Anybody else? Okay. And I would like categorical services number 3 pulled. Right. Categorical services number 3. Now, this is really odd because we never hardly pull anything, but okay. Aside from maintenance number 1 and 2, facilities 1 and 3, business services 4 and 5, personnel services 10, and categorical number 3. Would somebody like to make a motion to accept the remainder? Okay, Mr. Crawford moves to accept the remainder, and Mr. Harris seconds. All right. So let's start. We'll just go down. Oh, okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? None. Okay. Now, let's go back to Mr. Boom, maintenance 1 and 2.
Okay, on the first one, I know the maintenance department is stretched pretty thin, and I was looking at these figures on the $45,000 and the $42,000. It just seems pretty extravagant, and my question's more to the board or possibly Travis Ryan. Do we need to hire a few more maintenance workers so we can do some of these things ourselves? Because to install a few sprinkler systems, I know they did some soil samples. They did some of that stuff. I mean, you can do soil samples for a couple $100. You can have the system designed for a couple $100. If we had a few more people to start filling some of these holes, wouldn't we save some money doing some of this stuff in-house? And also the time frame on doing these projects, it doesn't seem like those are projects that should be planted in the summertime when it's 110 out, although it'd be nice to have them when the kids come back to school. But will they survive? If we get into water rationing situations, I don't know what the allocations are this year out in that area. I don't know if they're going to, you know, make it 2 days a week, 3 days a week, whatever. Is it going to, you know, will the plants even survive? And then on the contract on number 2, it talks about the aggregates. Who's going to haul off the existing aggregates? They're not going to be responsible for that. And what's that cost going to be?
Okay, so I'll start it before turning it over to Mr. Barnett. So both of the projects were for areas that were left in disrepair, or they had portables at the two schools because they built the new buildings. And so these have been for years. So the reason we're trying to get them done now is to have them ready for school and finally have them for use for our students. We don't believe with the planning, we've had the same water restrictions for a while now, that it will be an issue, obviously. It's more for to the enjoyment of our students in 16-17. Regarding the staffing for us, we've seen that staffing, these are more one-time projects in nature, not something that's recurring. So it's actually done by ground, would be done by, majority of the work would be done by ground staff. And so, yeah, I mean, people are stretched thin in the summer, but it's not something that would continue into the fall. So it's not something we necessarily maintain the staffing for. So we see it more as a one-time project. So, I don't know if Mr. Barnett would like to add any details.
Quick question. You said the majority of the work is going to be done by the ground staff. Is that what you said?
The majority of the work if
on
we had did it in-house. No, if we did it in-house.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm saying the majority of work is going to be done by the contractor. Okay. I'm saying if we had had staff in house to do it, it would be more the grounds, not maintenance. I'm sorry for the confusion.
Good afternoon. So just kind of to elaborate more on what Mr. DiGiulio is saying as well is we could do these type of projects. We're currently underway in one of the projects up at Foothill to install the entire irrigation system. So we have two guys working it very diligently to take care of that. So yes, if staffing was there, we could take on more projects, but in the long term, what would really be the ideal way to go is we have only so many fields, right? So if we were to hire more staffing to take on these projects at some point, now you're kind of overstaffed. So when we kind of look at these type of things, we're kind of looking at a long haul because, you know, everybody's aware I like to keep things in-house and keep everybody rolling. But in these type of particular instances, we're trying to capitalize by having maintenance. Believe it or not, we're actually cutting costs because we're adding like a French drain that's not listed here for Oliver, say. They have a huge drainage problem out there. So currently our maintenance staff is actually going to go out there and be installing a huge French drain that's going to avoid the drainage problem they have out there. And the aggregate you were talking about, the disposal of that, we're probably going to repurpose that at another site. It's just scraping off the old road base, so to speak, that was out there from the old portables, and we'll probably be using that somewhere else in another parking lot as fill. So kind of repurposing things, kind of like we were talking about the air conditioner here. We're just trying to really utilize the things we have. They have a good shelf life.
And to add to Mr. Barnett, one thing, too, is the funding sources for these. Some is using the remaining bond funds, and some is using some other restricted funding general funds. So it's one time in nature, so it isn't something we would really use to hire staff normally anyways.
Yeah. So on the sprinkler systems that they're going to use for, like, the trees, the shrubs, that kind of thing, what kind of a system are they using, do you know?
I believe they're going to a drip system, drip type of system for water conservation, things like that. Because everything when we're going in mine, we're really going towards water conservation.
Yeah,
but
and I see when you get into drip irrigations, poly tubes, poly pipes, spaghetti mm-hmm. tubes, drip emitters, it takes more work. I mean, there's more maintenance there.
Right.
So if we're going to add more of that stuff, it looks like we're going to have to add at least one more person somewhere along the lines. Because you go out and you do these beautiful projects, you install them, and then they sit there and they dry up because you don't have the time or the manpower to go around and keep checking them all the time. And drip irrigation systems are a lot more maintenance than hard piped.
Yeah, and I would agree with that statement. I mean, we're definitely running into that now where we feel like we're kind of running in circles trying to get to everything all at once. And as you can tell, we can only do so much with the man hours when we start quantifying where our time is spent. So I appreciate the acknowledgement.
Thank you.
And to add to Mr. Barnett, we are looking at areas in terms of organizing, but the plans aren't final yet. When they are, we will bring them before the board in terms of maximizing our in-house staff even more. We have had discussions. We are working on that along with personnel. So that will be coming.
If you're going to have permanent trees and permanent shrubs, then to me, hard piping and putting in bubblers is just as efficient as running poly tube and spaghetti tubes, because those things plug up with any hard water over a small amount of time, 2 years, 3 years, and those others are virtually maintenance free. So I don't know. To me, it looks like if we're going to do this kind of stuff, we need to at least keep it maintained, whether that's adding one more person, you know, doing something.
Okay.
But I, you know, the maintenance part of it, it's going to cause you guys more issues. So, anyways, okay, thank you.
Okay. That being said, the board will consider a motion for maintenance services number 1 and 2.
A motion to Mr. Fleury.
Okay, Mr. Fleury moves to approve 1 and 2.
I'll second.
And Mr. Boom seconds. This is going to be interesting. All those in favor?
Aye.
That's 5 yes. And 2 absent. Okay, that brings us to facilities 1 and 3. Is that you, Mr. Rasmussen?
Facilities 1 and 3. The inspection service and construction.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Mr. DiGiulio if he would elaborate a little bit on this. It looks like a lot of these things were things that we could be doing as the facilities department itself. I mean, the paperwork, punch walks, all that stuff. Is that stuff that we can't do?
No, it's required by DSA. You have to have a DSA certified inspector, so they have to be an outside contractor. I mean, they work in the best interest of the district, and so they're separate, but they're independent. So they're there inspecting as the work's being performed. We've had them on every project, and they're required by the state. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further questions?
You want to do facilities number 3 while we're on facilities?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, on number 3, should this not be categorized under a change order for this project? Would that be a change order?
Not to exceed $10,000.
Oh, that was actually separate. So when we were doing increment 1, they were the contractor at the time, DD, was in there inspecting the ducts, and they said, well, you have an issue that's not where the ducting's going to be, but it's in the same attic space. It's something you need to look to. So we just did it separately for the best price that we could get to address it. It was a structural issue where there were certain joists and things that weren't secured in the way. I don't know when that happened, over what year, so it's really kind of almost a deferred maintenance project that was identified during that project but not related. It didn't touch, or it wasn't in the area where the work was being done.
Okay, could the board will entertain a motion on facilities 1 and 3.
Motion to approve.
Mr. Boom moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Harris moves to second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Okay, that's
one absent.
Okay. Business services number 4 and 5. That's
yeah. Can you just explain this one a little bit? Go over it. It looks like something that also that we could possibly be doing in-house through the business services office.
You're referring to number four?
Number four.
We do a lot of work in-house. It's not just business services. A lot of the school sites do a lot of work on this. What they do is they compile all the information and ensure compliance. We've always had a firm work on mandated reporting. We do the mandate block right now because we're guaranteed the money, but there are certain new mandates that are falling outside of the block grant, including for reimbursements for the CAS testing that we recently did in the spring. So this is a new contract with a firm that will help us get as many of those dollars. So we do participate in this, but they're the ones who put the whole package together, ensure compliance, ensure with the state audit, and that we actually get that money, and there's no challenges to that. So pretty much every firm has some kind of firm that does it. I mean, every school district has a firm that does this kind of, and we're going with SINA for the 16-17 school year.
Okay. So they're checking and making sure that we're doing all the mandated service.
Yeah, they make sure all the collect all the paperwork. They make sure it's done in compliance, and that so if we do get audited on the mandate block grant or those individual state mandates, then we're in compliance and we'll get the money. So this year with CAS, that's probably going to be at least a couple hundred thousand dollars. So for us, it's an investment to make sure we get all that money and that none of it gets taken back.
Okay, and then number five, business services number five. This is about the master's facilities plan, basically. But, you know, we're going to, you know, you've done a good job with that, no doubt about it. Spent a lot of time, I'm sure, quite a bit of money. And we're looking at another $50,000. But I don't see any funding sources yet. And I know this is supposed to help identify some funding opportunities. But if we don't identify funding opportunities, our first 50 grand's gone. And how are we going to make that money up so that we can afford to do some of these projects?
So we're using Fund 25, which is a developer fee. So we're anticipating growth. We're planning. All this effort is to plan, and we're doing it in stages. We're not doing one big plan that would cost much more money up front. We're going to do it in stages, and tonight Capital Advisors Group and School Site Solutions, who are part of our team, are going to present the first edition, and it's going to be annually updated. And it provides a myriad of information regarding ours in one area, including scoping out the project, but also it mentions the funding options. But we just had recently had an RFP for a financial advisory firm. That will be coming July 19th, an agreement for that. They're the ones who give us the selected financial advice. What the plan does is, as we do get finances, as you notice, we've got the one-time finances. We have deferred maintenance money. This is going to help us expend that money. Plus, it lays everything out so when we do say, okay, we want to pursue these funding options, because there are a myriad of funding options that the plan lays out, we go to our financial advisor and say, this is our exact plan. This is our scope. Like, advise us on how to do this. And then, so it's all planning. It's all pre-planning so that we're ready. So these funding opportunities don't pass us by. We have everything loaded. We have everything we need to go forward and realize those funding opportunities. Otherwise, you know, you have to submit for anything, you know, whatever the funding opportunity is, you have to have your plan ready. So that's all we're doing is getting in front of it.
Yeah, I understand. I understand you got to plan ahead and get things laid out ahead of time. But once you've identified all these different projects and all these different phases and stuff going forward, and I know it's going to change, mm-hmm. but we're spending a lot of money ahead of the cart or ahead of the horse. I mean, to me, we're spending a lot of money to hope that we get to do these projects. We're not spending money knowing that we're going to get to do these projects.
We're going to have to find ways to get to do these projects, and I think we need, part of it is to let everybody know, whoever that may be, whether it's funding, that we need to do them, and these are the exact projects. The first couple of years, there's a large investment because we're collecting all the information, and as you're going to see next year in the presentation, we're adding details in terms of scope and dollar amounts so that when we go for any of those funding opportunities, we're not going to lose them. So, yeah, it is an investment forward, but we believe that it will provide us with those opportunities and ultimately provide us with the ability to obtain funding.
Yeah, I just hope we're not banking on doing a bond, a general obligation bond, because it's not going to fly, I can tell you right now.
There's a variety of ways to get funded. That's obviously one of them. And so the plan outlines more than just that.
Yeah, the taxpayers have been hit with two bonds from us, one from Ubicol, each in the last, five, six, 7 years, and I know bond's not going to go.
There hasn't been a state bond in years. Obviously, there looks to be one in November, so that's a force, and you have to get in line to get those monies and certain things, so you do have to have plans and scope, and you have to have projects either done or ready to go.
Right.
The other part of that is with the local, a lot of districts have had a lot of success with, obviously we've had two passed here within the last 10 years now. A lot of school districts have passed local bonds, so the state has moved it to the locals to finance that. We'll see if that changes. So maybe in November it will change a little bit. But we want to be in front of it as a district in terms of we need to know exactly what we need to do. Those things won't change. If we're updating every year, like I said, you get a pretty complete plan. You're not going to add that much year to year. But also what we're going to do with the plan is we're going to use it as a device to say, okay, we've done this, we've done that, we've completed. There are things on the list that will be completed with during the 16-17 year. So, again, a lot of it, too, is for us to track and do things and make sure that we're not, from the monies we do have, that we're actually tackling the priorities. And really that's why we consulted the board during this, because we want to do the true priorities of the district. We've really focused an effort not to just do random projects or things. I mean, we're focusing on measuring things by need from myriad of factors. So we're trying to do it in a very open, objective, and transparent process for the funding we do have. So that's another purpose behind the plan.
So, Ryan, is it prudent to approve this when we haven't even approved the master facilities plan?
Well, if you don't approve the master plan, we'll make further adjustments to it. It's a draft form until you approve it.
Seems to me we should get the master facilities plan rolling a little bit and then see how we want to augment it for next year.
We assumed that it would continue.
Okay. No other comments?
I would just like to say that, as you'll hear tonight with the presentation, there is a lot more to do to make the plan truly a viable document that will allow us to take it to the next level. So if you want to pull it and wait and perhaps bring it back on the 19th of July, once you've seen what the plan looks like, I think that will help you to see why we need to continue the scope of their services.
I would prefer to do that.
Okay, could we have
we'll just pull it from this agenda and re-agendize for the 19th.
Pull number 5.
Yeah, business services number 5. Do we have a motion for business services 4?
Yeah, I'll move to approve.
Mr. Boone moves to approve. Mr. Danable seconds. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 6 yes.
And 1 absent.
And 1 absent. Okay, that brings us to Personnel Services 10. MOU with Sutter County Superintendent.
So actually I have a question and then a comment about it. So it seems to me, I guess it was just my assumption when we created a new position and hired Mrs. Goodman for that position, that she would be doing the teacher training or TSIP with regards to that. But looks like we're still contracting with Sutter County Superintendent of Schools to go through that TSIP program.
That's correct, because our new teachers need to go through the induction program as required by law to clear their credentials. The County Office of Education, the County Office is the only one that is approved in Northern, actually, I take that back. There are 3 agencies that are approved by CTC and CDE to clear credentials, and the County, Sutter County Office of Ed is one of them. We don't have an approved program here. Our new director will support our new teachers through their development in a way that TSIP no longer does. TSIP is just about checking boxes, in my opinion. Our new director is going to be more about helping Ed Services and bringing those new teachers along and providing resources, providing support that will improve their effectiveness through that very appropriately named program, teacher effectiveness program, and ensure that they're getting the supports beyond the checking the boxes for the sake of clearing credentials.
I certainly know, thank you, Mr. Carrion, but it may be premature. Of all of our new hires, how many of our teachers, off the top of your head, need the induction program?
Well, we have approximately 25 that will be year twos for next year, but our newer teachers hired so far, about a third have cleared credentials. So we're actually hiring more teachers with more experience at this particular time. It won't always be the case as we bring more forward, because we still have some vacancies to fill, and we probably will still hire some more new teachers. All told, I would have guessed we were going to have far more new teachers needing to go through the induction program, but that doesn't seem to be penciling out that way.
Okay. And does the cost of $2,600 or whatever it is there, does that include the entire induction program, or is that for just Tier 1? Or
that's for each year of the program. So a Year 1 participant will be costing us that much, a Year 2 participant the same. So 20, quick math here, about $5,300 for the whole program. If they go to an institution of higher ed, they're going to have to pay for units, which is greater. And as part of our attracting and retaining new teachers, we're committed to helping them through the induction process.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carrion.
Thank you.
And then, secondly, I have a conflict of interest there, so I'd like to abstain from that.
Recuse.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, Mr. Harris moves to accept personnel services number 10, seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. One absent and
one abstain.
Okay. And that brings us to categorical services number 3. And one of the things that I was going through the book, and on page 61 in the back, I never heard of this before, but it's the idea that there's a constitutionally protected prayer in public schools rule, and I know we all read this very thoroughly in the back, but that's the first time I've ever run across that there is a constitution. If there's any comments.
We do protect the right of students to pray in class. We just don't conduct prayer in class. So it is a protected right should they choose to do that. And Mrs. Larson is here if you need further clarification.
And this is also one of the certifications that we do approve every single year when we turn in our application for funding for all categorical programs, really reduced to federal programs at this time. But it's been there as long as I've been here.
That's okay. We just like to hear your voice.
You know, well, thank you.
That's great. Okay. That was my only comment is running across it, because we hear so many anti-prayer things in the media. So I thought that was kind of nice to actually see that. Okay, and I'll make the motion to accept categorical number 3.
If second.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. One absent. Okay. Moving past the consent agenda to new business. Child development program. Well, we don't need that, right? Okay.
The first agenda item is actually to create a resolution for our contract for $5,000 for pre-literacy activities that we use with our preschool program to support literacy development with the students and the parents. Typically that comes in the form of the Raising a Reader program that we use. questions
okay.
about that.
Any discussion? Is there a motion? Mr. Boone moves to approve. Seconded by Mr. Rasmussen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, one absent. 6-0. All right. Thank
okay,
you.
And the second agenda item.
No, is okay. Well, sorry. We'll go to number two.
It's getting warm in here, is it not? No.
We're higher than you are.
Okay.
The air is thinner up here.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to number two. Resolution 2015-16-31.
Yeah, this is a resolution requesting that the board approve the contracts that we have with the Department of Education to actually fulfill the services that we do with our district that include our state preschool program and then full-day, year-round services for our school-age program.
No discussion. I'll make a motion to approve.
Mr. Harris makes a move. Motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Danable seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you kindly.
We're good? Any nays? No.
Okay.
I'm
pleased to announce, just on a side note, that we did get notification from the governor this week that we will be getting a 10% increase in our state preschool funds for this starting in January. So we're super tickled about that.
Good.
Pull more resources into the program so we can improve the quality. So.
Great.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. Okay, Superintendent, number one, District LCAP approval.
At our last meeting, we held a public hearing for review of the local control accountability plan, and I did move through that presentation with you. With one minor correction, Mr. Rasmussen noticed that there were 10 high school counselors noted. There really are only 8, 4 at Lyndhurst, 4 at Marysville, so we will make that correction in some of the charts that I provided as well as the PowerPoint. But other than that, there are no other changes that I have been made aware of, so I would recommend that the board approve the 16-17 LCAP as presented to you last week with the one change.
Any comments? If not, okay, Mr. Fleury moves to approve. Is there a second? Mr. Rasmussen seconds. Okay. Sorry, Tony. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any nays? None. Okay. 6-0. Okay.
Mr. Malone is approaching the microphone, but it is the same as our district presentation from last week. And so
right.
I don't know if you have anything additional to add, but it is to approve the draft
as
presented.
Yeah, it's just to approve what I presented the Marysville Charter Academy LCAP last week, just as Gay Todd did for the district. And then today I'm just here to ask you to approve it. So.
I just want to mention two of your students were in the Sunday paper as a dance team this last weekend.
Okay.
And that's neat to have representation in Northern California. And that's only the second winner I've seen from this area in 10 years. So that's great.
Yeah, very proud of them.
So. Motion to approve.
Okay, Mr. Harris moves to approve. Seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor?
Aye.
6 yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We need to hold a public hearing, so I'll declare the public hearing open on Board Policy 6179, Supplemental Instruction. Any comments? Or anybody in the audience would like to say anything about this?
If no one wishes to step forward, I'll make a motion to close public hearing.
Mr. Harris moves to close the public hearing. Is there a second? Mr. Danable seconds. Okay. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. 6 yes. Okay. Now we need to approve the amendment to the 6179. So is there a motion to approve the amendments?
I make a motion to approve amendments to Board Policy 6179.
Is there a second? Oh, too late. Mr. Boone. Mr. Boone gets the second. Okay. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that's six yes. All right. Business services, number one, 2016-17 Long Range Facilities Master Plan. Oh, rising to the occasion. Okay.
How do I accept the stuff in here? There we go. Thank you all for having me here tonight. Kathy Domenico with Capital PFG, and Regina here from School Site Solutions is here as well. We've been really pleased to work with the district on the development of the 2016-17 version of the Facilities Master Plan, and you've been involved throughout the entire process, so hopefully nothing here will be a surprise. We'll walk through some of the items. Please feel free to ask questions, have a discussion about it as we go, and we'll talk about next steps moving forward. So what we're really looking at is an overall document that many agencies use, not just schools, to really identify the current and future facilities needs of the district, identify funding sources available, and create something that is reviewed and updated on an ongoing basis. Which is something that is relatively unique for your district is the concept of creating a plan and letting the plan evolve regularly instead of something that's created and sits on a shelf that you kind of don't dust off until you really need to do something and update it. The scope of the plan will evolve. As you look through the document, you're going to see lists of facilities needs that really haven't been scoped out, that really haven't been formulated. The reason there aren't pictures in there is we don't know exactly what that looks like yet. Some of that is timing. When you think about developing a plan of this magnitude with the number of school sites you have and the number of stakeholders that are involved in the conversation, it takes a lot of time to get through that process, and often it is a multi-year process. So what we're bringing to you tonight is essentially, I call it phase one of your master plan. What subsequent actions are dependent on some of the recommendations that we're putting forward that I'd love to talk with you about and consider, because they will impact what your master plan ultimately looks like. The timing of when you take them on, and I think this kind of couples with the discussion you were having earlier, is really dependent on your board goals and priorities and what you're looking to do and achieve. If your goal is to try to get in line for state funding, your motivation for moving forward may be a little more rapid than if your goal is something else. Another reason to look at this actually has to do with mitigation. You have development that's starting to pick up, especially on the southern portion of your boundaries, and making sure that you have a document in place to communicate with developers that are expecting something like this, to show them what your plans are and how that type of funding fits into the overall model is important. If you just tell them, yeah, we need to do some projects, they're not likely going to be willing to provide enhanced funding. So there are several just peripheral reasons to look at this type of document outside of the internal, we need to know what we're trying to achieve. Your FMP is made up of several components. It starts with kind of an overall district history. I think of this as almost a PR piece. This is something that will likely go on your website. It can be reviewed by your community, by school communities, by site administrators, and it's something to be proud of. Your district has achieved a lot of successes, and we've talked about them in the committee meetings. And all of the bond investment that your community has made into the district can be captured in this. Each school site has its own identification of projects completed since 2005-06. That is really important to promote the successes you've had in this district over the last few years. Your planning doesn't start today. Your planning started a long time ago, and it's evolving and growing as the district changes. The master plan looks at demographics. You actually had a demographic analysis completed by SchoolWorks that looks at what you can expect from a student population into the future. As a board, what that provides you is information on the student population, where they're going to be, what schools could be impacted by changing demographics of your district. It helps you prepare for facilities needs to serve a future population. New development is a factor in this as well, and understanding where potential new development areas could be. You are responsible to respond to the general plans of the various land use agencies within your boundaries. You have the City of Marysville, and you have Yuba County. City is not as active. There's not a lot of room to build within city limits, but the county is relatively active and has actually just updated their general plan in the last few years. There are some projects in there that either are going to, I'm guessing, go away. Spring Valley is one of them. That it's in the general plan. We have to acknowledge it exists, but the reality is I don't think there's a political will for that to do anything. There's a Magnolia Ranch. What happens there? Is that going to affect your boundaries? Is that something that another district is going to have to deal with? What about North Arboga Study Area? What about the north zone of the Plumas Lake Specific Plan? What about the East Linda Specific Plan? What's happening with those development areas? And how does your existing funding model fit into the future needs from students that are going to come from those development areas? You'll see in the document when you're looking at existing school sites and their available capacities that in the near term, we're not anticipating so much growth that you're going to need to add schools or classrooms to accommodate those students, except perhaps at the high school level. But as you look at build out, you will likely need to consider new school facilities again. We look at facilities needs assessment. There was a needs assessment completed in conjunction with district staff by School Site Solutions. They went school to school and identified what the needs were. Of course, being familiar with the committee, that list was part of the discussions that you had with site administrators on, you can do a laundry list of needs, but what's actually important to the sites and to the district? And one of the main purposes of that committee was to evaluate all of these facilities needs and bring to the top those projects that we really need to focus on. So in your master plan, projects are grouped into tiers based on this prioritization. That input combined with a formula that we'll talk about in a few moments that actually sets forth what projects do rise to the top and which ones are still important but will be completed as funding allows. We looked at funding options as well, and there is a list of funding options in there. You do need to set yourself up for a variety of them. One of them, we talk about the tolerance for general obligation bond, but that may be a funding approach that you need to pursue in order to actually fund a portion of the projects on the list. The state bond, in order to actually achieve the receipt of state bond funds, you need to have defined projects in place to qualify for the funding. And mitigation fees, you need to have a plan in place to show the development community what you are going to be spending funding on. So those are that's a quick overview of the components of the master plan, but as we went through the committee, we were kind of building to that document, so hopefully nothing was a surprise to you when you actually saw the document itself. This is a chart we actually showed, I think, in a different form in one of the community meetings, and I highlighted this a moment ago, but I want to bring it up again. Your district has actually made a significant capital investment into its schools. About $134 million since 2005-06 has been spent at the schools throughout the district. And this is just showing a little bit about how that those funds have been distributed.
How does that compare to, I know not just right here, but mm-hmm. I mean, how does that compare to other districts? I mean, of like size and, you know.
What I think is interesting with your district is you have older facilities than a lot of districts that are kind of in your size at this point. And you've actually had success getting funding from the local community where a lot of districts have not. So your funding level, I actually think, is impressive. When we were doing a lot of the needs assessments and some of the discussions we were having at the staff level, we were actually quite impressed with the investment into your facilities. The problem is your schools are really old, and you're getting to the point where you keep investing, but you're getting to that breaking point, that tipping point, where you still need to keep putting money in order to preserve them for future generations of students. So I actually am quite impressed with the investment. Even if you look locally at some of the other districts, if you go down to Plumas Lake, their schools are all new. We can't compare it to them.
Right.
Look over in Wheatland. Just if you take them and if you were going to multiply them out, they wouldn't have even invested a quarter of what you have if you were going to take their schools and multiply them out. Their schools are not in the same shape yours are in. They haven't had that community investment. Although they recently had a bond, they have not had the history of community investment that you have. Additionally, those mitigation agreements that you have provide you with higher level of funding than the average school district in the state of California. I want to repeat that because it's very important. Your mitigation agreements that already exist have provided you with a higher level of funding than other average school districts in California. Why is that important? Because you have gotten money outside of your taxpayers to fund capital needs. You were great at getting ahead of the development curve and having that in place. So those are just some key things to tell you. I think you're doing better than the curve.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, please. That's what we want. So let's just talk through the process for identifying the district's future capital facilities needs, because I think it's important for the board and actually the community to understand that we didn't just go in and say, what do we need? You actually had a well thought out process that was guided by your staff. We looked at and evaluated the anticipated students from new development to determine whether new schools or classrooms were needed, and of considering available school capacity. One of the mistakes I find with a lot of school districts is that they see new development coming and they automatically start counting heads, and then they start building schools to accommodate that without looking at the demographics of their existing community and figuring out how some of those students can fit into your existing schools. Your master plan does that so you're not overbuilding. Very important. The facilities needs assessment was completed at each school site to identify capital improvement needs, and we talked about that extensively at the committee level. Again, the committee, comprised of board members, district office staff, and school site administrators, evaluated project priorities, actually on different levels. The school sites provided input on what was important to the sites. We're going to talk about that in a moment. That was a factor in the formula that ultimately determines how projects would be completed. The board dug into the types of projects that there are that we have and what's important. And the board did a prioritization of the different types of projects. That's a factor in the formula. And I keep mentioning this formula. We then developed a formula that takes other things into consideration as well, such as legal or code compliance. These are the things you have to do whether you want to or not. We've got to rank those in the formula, and other factors such as restricted funding availability. So I will bring up the formula in a few moments, but there was a process to identify the capital needs. I mentioned previously the district is operating under capacity. This chart's in the master plan, and I don't expect you to absorb it right here on the screen. But what I want you to draw your attention to is individual school sites. And so overall, the district is operating under capacity. But let's look at some individual school sites where you might have sites being impacted in the future if some additional students come in. I don't put this up here to scare you. I put it up here to say this is something we need to think about. As schools reach capacity, instead of building new space, in order to preserve our facilities dollars, the limited facilities dollars, consider how shifts in boundaries, which I know is a touchy subject, but consider how shifts in boundaries can actually accommodate those students instead of a large-scale capital investment. Not asking you to make that decision today, not asking you to go down that path. Put it up there just to show you what that means when we're saying the district's operating under capacity. At the high school level, though, I think you are going to have some challenges, especially if development starts to pick up, even at a slow pace. We talked about that prioritization. The board has clear priorities on the types of projects. We talked about this briefly at the end of the last committee meeting, but I don't know if you actually absorbed what the board's prioritizations were. Do you remember we went through and did a ranking of the various subcategories? This actually was the result. Where it says average board ranking, it says 5. That actually was the highest ranking. So some board members put it at number 1. The structural integrity was number 1. Some board members had it down at, say, 8. The average score was 5. The perimeter access control line item, the average score of all the board members was 5.43. On the utilities, the average score was 5.83. Does everybody understand how these rankings occurred? These are important because this ranking actually is a factor in the prioritization formula for how projects will be completed. And it continues. This table is actually in the master plan so that this is transparent and it's available for the public. The prioritization formula I keep alluding to actually has 5 different components with a total potential score of 100. So a project could potentially get a score of 100 points. If it's a type of project that is of high priority to the board, it is scored at most a 20, at least a 1. So every project is in a category, and the lowest board-ranked priority projects, based on this, would get a 1, the highest would get a 20. So if you look at this, structural integrity projects are all going to receive a 20. Operational support services projects are going to receive a 1. in that formula category. Does that make sense? The next component of the prioritization formula is site priority. At the committee meetings, each school site identified their top priority projects. Those priority projects automatically get 20 points because we want to make sure that the school site's priorities are reflected in the actual projects to be completed. Another component of the project prioritization formula is systems reaching or exceeding useful life, or you're lacking something. You're lacking a necessary item or facility. So let's say you've got HVAC that had a 20-year useful life, and it's sitting on that building in year 25. That means it's exceeded its useful life and needs to be replaced. That would be scored a 20. If that same HVAC unit has been there for 20 years and has a 20-year useful life, it gets 15 points. If it's reaching the end of its useful life, it's been there 15 years, it's going to get there in 5 more years, it's scored a 10. Okay, let's talk about necessary facilities. Let's say we deem a cafeteria to be a necessary facility and a school is lacking one. That project would get 20 points. Does that make sense to them? Legal compliance, legal or code compliance. This is kind of self-explanatory. If you have to do it, it gets 20 points. A lot of the ADA compliance projects fit in this list. We'll talk about DSA legacy. Projects like that may fit in this list. In order to do that, in order to move forward with anything at the site, you have to complete these particular projects. And then restricted funding availability. Projects would receive 20 points. So if you received a grant for a certain type of project, that money cannot be spent on anything else. The project would be weighted accordingly. Based on that, we have established the listing of projects. And to pull it out of the master plan, because I just thought it'd be a little easier, I'm actually going to distribute just a list of the tier 1 projects. On the screen is just a summary of basically your top 10 here. So you'll see on the left-hand side, based on that formula, the top-ranked project is actually electrical system capacity safety upgrade. Think about the categories that's in. It was actually a very high-priority project for the board, based on the category. It was identified by district office staff when they were doing their top two high-priority projects as a top-priority project. There's legal code compliance issues related to this. And you've got systems exceeding useful life. So essentially, this has become your highest project with a score of 78 points. And as you play down the list, you will see your second-ranked project is actually the drinking fountains over at Lyndhurst High. The third and fourth-ranked, you actually have a lot of projects at Loma Rica Elementary as your top-ranked projects based on the formula. You can see a lot of them are code compliance related. And moving down the list. One thing you don't see here, though, that I think is very important to highlight is dollars. So we have these high-priority projects with no dollars attached. Ideally, in a master plan, you are going to have not just an identification of what the need is, but a project scope with dollars attached so that you actually can move forward to secure whatever that level of funding is. When we talk about the fact that the master plan is completed in phases, this would be an immediate next phase, is to scope out the high-priority projects, not every project on the list, but your high-priority projects, and try to put some more meat on the bones so that you actually are able to complete that type of project. So that's when we're describing what's needed immediately in the future, that would be an immediate next step. In the appendix to the master plan, there are Tier 2 and Tier 3 projects. We don't want things to fall off the list. But again, until you get through your Tier 1, we're probably not considering your Tier 2 and Tier 3 unless circumstances change. And so you also aren't going to cost out projects that are in Tier 3 because by the time you get to them, it's not going to matter. So it's being reasonable and not doing too much, doing what you need to do in order to set yourself up appropriately into the future. Given that, we want to go through the specific recommendations outlined in the master plan. Number one, and this is not actually in a particular priority order, this is how they were identified in the master plan, is to update the educational specifications. It's important to link what you're doing in your classrooms to what the educational program is. And basically, as your curriculum has changed and evolved, we need to make sure that your facilities are still responding. Educational specifications are a separate document that could be incorporated as an appendix to your master plan and maybe just summarized as part of the facilities needs component. Create an ADA compliance plan, recommendation number two. This actually is something you have to do. You are legally required to have an ADA compliance plan, number one. Number two, as we talk about all those code compliance things, one thing that we may not be aware of are other projects that are essential in order to actually complete projects that are on the list. So whenever you touch a school site, you need to think of the ADA improvements that are necessary. Basically, let's talk about a building. Let's say there's a building, a multipurpose room that you're going to improve on a campus. And there's parking lot improvements that are required in order to meet ADA compliance. In order to even touch that multipurpose room, you could likely have to spend money on parking lot improvements before you can spend a dime in that multipurpose room in order to get state approval of the project. So those are things to think about. Without knowing what that is, you don't know how to layer it into your overall scope of the project. So you could be short hundreds of thousands of dollars on a project scope if you haven't identified what those particular needs may be. So not only do you have to do it, it's actually helpful to have when you're scoping out projects.
And excuse me, so currently we do not have an ADA compliance plan? Is that what we're saying?
No.
No. Okay.
Somewhat.
So that is something that we really...
So is that something that we would have to farm out, or do we do that in-house, or how do we do that plan?
Well, to answer your question, there are different options. At San Juan Unified School District, for example, I had two engineering technicians who had the software and the equipment to go out and measure every single door, sink, drinking fountain, look at signs, everything. So we did it in-house with the help of ADA consultants. Here, unfortunately, since we do not have that kind of staffing, and nor do we have AutoCAD, it would be who of us to hire the service. And we actually we've had a proposal prepared for our district when I first got here because of the importance of this item. And so we'll probably be readdressing that in the near future.
You might not want to go far because I think the next one's going to be another question. The next one is addressing the DSA legacy projects. I'm having Cynthia stay because often this generates questions. DSA legacy projects have to do with the closeout of prior projects and the fact that, again, if you're going to go in and do another project, you need to make sure that all of the records in place with the Division of State Architect are in order and you've complied with their requirements related to past projects. This could be as simple as paperwork. This could be as complicated as actually needing to take on additional construction in order to comply with their requirements. You are already in process on looking at what those needs are. The recommendation here is to actually address what that is. If it's a paperwork problem, take care of the paperwork. If it's actually construction that's needed, it should be captured and added to your master plan. Any questions? Okay. The next recommendation is asset management plan. In the master plan, you have six sites that were identified that are essentially vacant properties that the district isn't realizing the benefit of the asset. One of the things to do is look at those properties and consider the best use of the district to that asset. What we are recommending in the master plan is any revenues you receive from these assets are then reinvested into the capital facilities of the district and can actually help fund projects on the list. So that's something to look at. An asset management plan typically looks not only at the acreage, it looks at alternative uses, it looks at the sale or lease of property. I have some districts that have been very creative with property. I have a school district that has an auto dealership on their property, and they get a portion of the revenues. I'm not saying that that's possible but it's not as simple as let's just get rid of the property. Let's look at the best use of that asset. Develop a general obligation bond plan. I know there may not be a community tolerance for it, but there may be. It's one of those things where realistically, in order to get through the projects on your list, you will likely need to pursue a local funding option. Does that mean you're doing it this year? No. Does that mean you're doing it in 2018? Maybe not. That's really a direction for your board or a future board, but you do need to look at what the potential is for that to see your order of magnitude. If you can only get $10 million, you're going to be looking at a different plan as compared to, say, $50 million. Does that make sense? Or at least know what your community could support and what that means to the community. What's the tax rate? What's the term? What is the implication of that? Develop project scope and cost for the top priority projects. We've kind of addressed that a couple of times. Again, just the top priority projects. You're not going to cost out every project on the list because you're not going to get to it in the time, in the appropriate time frame. And integrate the deferred maintenance plan with the long-range FMP. And I know your staff is already working on this. It seems obvious. But you're not going to do deferred maintenance projects and kind of Band-Aid something that you're going to replace the next year. Let's make sure that they're in concert. And projects that may no longer be deferred maintenance, maybe that are elevated towards a full replacement, appear on the master plan. With that, we'll take any questions.
So I think early on in your presentation, I thought I heard you say it would behoove us to go back and look at all the projects that were completed through the current bond or previous bond and start publicizing those. So have we ever done anything of that nature, or we've already got that completed?
Keep doing it. Yes. Promote yourself.
Right.
You've done a great job.
Oh. As part of our bond obligation, which is to notify the voters what you've done with the funding, and so there's been annual notifications of projects completed through the years of the bond.
Thank you.
To add one note to that, now that we're going to be finishing those landscaping projects and the bond will essentially be complete, we're probably going to take this information and what we have here and republicize it again. So that was part of this effort. So now we have all that information kind of centralized. So we'll republicize that again, likely during the 16-17 year, a recap of the past two bonds. This is everything that we've done. And so this started that effort, but we'll put that together this year.
Yeah, that effort's going to be extremely important because we did a really nice job with our bonds, and I think people were generally happy with it. But then you get all that negative publicity from what UBA College did, and people are saying there's no way we're going to support another bond because they absolutely blew it.
And there's strategic ways you look at it, because one specific item was, you know, Foothill Intermediate. $370,000 has been spent in the last 10 years, essentially. And a lot of that came with the septic system, the sewage that we just did. So if you look at the priorities, you'll look at number 6 is tied, and they're essentially the same project, is to modernize that entire interior of that school site, which we've talked about for years. So it's about aligning what we have and haven't done. And now there's, like, there is a logic behind it and what's coming next and what our priorities are. So, you know, we have to admit certain things, like, well, we haven't spent a lot on this site. We know, but we have it in our priority listing. So it's the beginning of those efforts.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the other thing, too, now that we've done two bonds, the public is a lot more educated about how they work.
Yes.
And when somebody over there can say, I'm going to vote to tax you, they're not real happy with that. They don't. To me, it should be against the law, the way general obligation bonds work. You should have to do it through a sales tax so everybody pays, not that everybody votes to raise other people's taxes.
Yeah, to property
and
owners,
and I understand
essentially.
It can't work that way. It's not, but, I mean, that's my opinion. But, and a lot of people understand the way bonds work now, and they're not as happy when they figure out that not everybody's paying for these facilities. Only the people that actually own property are paying for the facilities.
Agree.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Board policy 3320. Is there a motion to approve? Oh, excuse me.
Oh,
I'm.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm sorry. But yeah.
Master plan. Okay.
I did.
Is there a motion? Mr. Harris moves to approve. Is there a second? Mr. Rasmussen. All those in favor? Aye. Six yes. One absent. Okay. We're done. Okay. Next we have board policy 3320, claims and actions against the district. Hold a public hearing. So that's open now. Don't all run away at once.
Thank you.
Okay. They have early mornings.
Oh. No, we've got the three the three amigos there. Okay. Mr. Harris moves to close the public hearing. Is there a second? Mr. Rasmussen seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? None. Six yes. One missing. Okay, now we have to actually approve the amendment. Before we do that, on page 316, I had a question or something to clarify. About the middle of the page, it says, this policy is intended to apply retroactively, which I didn't think we could do. You couldn't apply something and make a new policy and then make it retroactive to a situation prior to the passage of the change in the policy.
It's not intended for things that already occurred. It's for things that might be brought in the future. And this was already existing. This isn't part of the change. The only changes are the highlighted, and we just align it with what our insurance plus recommends. So once it gets to a court, obviously, you know, when it occurred will matter. So I wouldn't.
Okay, that satisfies me.
Take that too literally.
And the board policies do come from CSBA, so it's been vetted for all legal compliance.
Well, that's why insurance.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve amendments to board policy 3320.
Okay, Mr. Boom. And seconded by Mr. Danimal. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And item three, board policy 5126. Okay. Awards for achievement. There's a public hearing, and that's open. I would like to point out one thing here, that this eliminates the Bernie Rex Award at Marysville High School because it eliminates cash on page 324. Okay. Cash awards would no longer be legal. But I'll figure out a way around it.
Give them a check.
Yeah, I have to give it to the counselors. Have them award it. Anyway, any further discussion? Okay, the board will entertain a motion. Mr. Danimal moves to approve this. To close the public hearing. Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and next we move to approve the amendments.
So six yes.
Six yes votes. Okay, and is there a motion to approve? Mr. Danimal moves to approve. Is there a second? Mr. Boom seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Six yes. Okay, and that brings us to District's 2016-17 proposed adopted budget.
As presented, we could go along with the LCAP. We have a favorable monetary outlook and budget outlook in 2016-17, subject to obviously some changes. If the LCAP was adopted, so that will stay as is unless there's any further revisions. Obviously, some operational changes, anything beyond that. And the full budget packet is to the board, so I'm available to answer any questions that weren't answered last week.
I think we've been pretty thorough on that over the last couple meetings. If there's no further comments, the board will entertain a motion to approve. Mr. Danimal moves to approve. Mr. Rasmussen seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And district's proposed adopted budget is approved. And this is due by July 1, right? I mean, to the state.
Yes.
where they can take another 3 months to figure out if they're going to give us any money.
And I would like to invite the board to come back to conference room one for just a moment of conversation.
Okay. Thank you.